Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the fourth day of November 2019. It's Monday. Monday, we had a bad case of the Mondays. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thanks for sharing, telling a friend, sharing on social media, rating and reviewing, and just the word of mouth that you give us is awesome. The show wouldn't exist without you, so that you tell other people is the cherry on top. And thank you very much for that. We've got a lot of things to get to. Tons of stuff going on. Don't try and cover a bunch of ground today, but if you want to enter to win the signed copy of Jesus on Trial by David Limbaugh, you've got to email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It is not a copy of his new book, Guilty by Reason of Insanity. Not that one. The signed copy I have was written out to me, and he mailed it to me. But when David is in town next, I will have signed copies of that to give away. Until then, I just happen to have an old copy of Jesus on Trial that he'd signed a long time ago. So just as good. You can email me anything you want, Derek at dailycaller.com as well. The Patreon website, by the way, if you're interested in supporting the program and upgrading the technology used to make the show and helping me out in a bunch of ways, is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. All right, let's get into it. But first, we tip our caps, which today is a replacement's hat, to our sponsor. I want to tell you about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I can't tell you how much better I feel and how much more energy I have. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. It's the tea that makes you go. It cleans you out. Look, you got to get that stuff out of you. Let's face it. Our food was different 60 years ago. Minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy processing have depleted nutrition in our food. It's no wonder you feel run down. You add to that the layer of filth that's inside of you that stops you from being able to absorb all the nutrition that's in our food, and you begin to see the problem. Try it for yourself. Go to getthetea.com now. And I know that many of you have, and you've been emailing me. Never thought I'd get so many emails about what it does, but follow the instructions. And they all notice the new energy that they have. Getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. I have a little cup of it right now, as a matter of fact. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com. Use as directed and enter the promo code Derek at checkout, and you get free shipping. There you go, lifechangetea.com. Okay, where do we start? Elizabeth Warren, do we talk about Elizabeth Warren's plan? Let's talk about Nancy Pelosi, shall we? Let's start with Aunt Nancy. She's very concerned about her party, as she should be. They've gone crazier and crazier and crazier, and that doesn't bode well. No matter how much they manage to demonize Donald Trump, if they put up somebody who's wildly unpopular and or insane, it's not going to make a difference. It reminds me of that old joke. All they got to do is act sane, and they can't do it. They haven't been able to string together a couple of days of seeming like rational adults, let alone an entire election season. Washington Examiner has this story because Nancy Pelosi is concerned that while the lunacy of free stuff for everybody will play well in the coastal areas, the liberal elite areas, the rest of the country, it's not going to fly very well. Washington Examiner, Speaker Nancy Pelosi warned the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates not to lurch too far to the left, because whoever the nominee is will still need to win in a general election. Now, it's a little bit too late. I don't know. They've leaned so far left, they're a circle now. Pelosi, 79, expressed concerns that a nominee who is too far to the left might not be able to beat President Trump come November. And I thought that Democrats were going to have him impeached and removed from office for all of his obvious high crimes and misdemeanors by then. But you're telling me that he's still going to be running for president? What? Quote, this is what Nancy Pelosi told Bloomberg News. Quote, what works in San Francisco does not necessarily work in Michigan. What works in Michigan works in San Francisco, talking about workers' rights and sharing prosperity. Remember November. You must win the Electoral College. I would point out that what works in San Francisco will not necessarily work in Michigan. It'll work in pockets around Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan is, around the liberal, the city of Detroit is a lost cause. They've watched liberalism destroy their city over the last 60 years, and they just keep bellying up to the bar and asking for another. It's like watching somebody drink themselves to death. But what works in Michigan, in the rest of Michigan, would never work in San Francisco, because the mindset is completely different. Having been a native-born Michigander and lived there the vast majority of my life, I can tell you that the mindset in Michigan is not, I can't believe somebody has more than me, they need to be punished, government needs to come in and take from them so that I have it too, or that I have it exclusively. That's not the Midwest mindset. People in the Midwest are not obsessed with what somebody else has that they don't. We don't care. It's unless they stole it from us, what do we care if somebody has 15 Ferraris or Lamborghinis or whatever the super duper expensive car that's hot? Cannonball Run 2 was on the other day, so I'm thinking Lamborghinis. But yes, it's a terrible movie. Don't watch it. But that mindset is very much in play in liberal enclaves on the coasts. How can somebody have something? You cannot, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is rich because other people are poor. Jeff Bezos is rich because other people are poor. That's not the case at all. And moreover, people in the Midwest, while they look at someone like Jeff Bezos and go, yeah, it would sure be nice to have that kind of money, they don't then say, government, go get it for me. Most people, and this is what the left doesn't understand about flyover country, and they'll never understand about flyover country, because most of their policies are based on, or sold in part at least, on the concept of jealousy. Be jealous of what somebody else has. Be resentful about what somebody else is doing, where they're going, what they, you know, there's this whole industry. It's a pretty sad commentary. But there are people who have Instagram accounts who post pictures of their fabulous vacations, and they just accrue followers, millions of followers. Not because they're interesting people, not because they're smart people, not because they're witty people, simply because they're living a fabulous life. And they're able to monetize that, by the way. And God bless capitalism for that. But then the people who follow them think, I should be living like that. There is this entire industry on the left designed to make people jealous of people who live the good life. Look, if your parents were billionaires or multimillionaires or even just millionaires or whatever, able to give you anything, congratulations, you got lucky. You're the lucky sperm. But somebody watching that lifestyle, it perverts the mindset of people who are told that those people are rich, undeservingly so. You should have some of their money. We should all spread it around so we can all live like that. And of course, we know that if you spread it all around, if the government were to seize everything and give everybody an equal share, there wouldn't be that much. There wouldn't be enough to live that kind of lifestyle you so desperately seem to want. But it is still, thanks to our culture, ingrained and beaten into people's heads on a regular basis, which is frightening, that this is how nobody should be living like this, but you should be living like this. It's not fair that somebody else is living like this. You should be living like this. Now, before the internet, yes, I'm old enough to have remembered a time. I didn't get my first computer until 1998, I think. It's a piece of crap Windows thing, but I just didn't. I used to type papers on an old manual typewriter. That was just all we could afford. That was the deal. And then the internet came into being. All those times before the internet, before Instagram, before social media, there were rich people. And those rich people were living pretty sweet-ass lives. They were going to places you wouldn't even know how to pronounce, let alone find on a map. You wouldn't have a clue about these places, but they were doing it. They're still doing it, but now the whole world can see. Oh yeah, I guess every once in a while there was lifestyles of the rich and famous that would give you a peek into it. But now we have the virtual reality of it coming to our phones 24/7. That has polluted the minds of a lot of people who don't understand, why can't I do that? Why can't I be in Saint-Tropez with Leonardo DiCaprio and 15, you know, supermodels from Victoria's Secret? Well, you can't be there because you're not friends with Leonardo DiCaprio and you haven't made hundreds of millions of dollars. Everybody wants the end result now, because part of our education system that has been stripped out is the concept, and it's not just education, it's part of our political system, is to strip out the personal responsibility part. The most important part. Leonardo DiCaprio didn't wake up one day as just some random 19-year-old douchebag that every Victoria's Secret model wanted to sleep with. He is the guy that most Victoria's Secret models will sleep with, and he can upgrade every time one of them has the misfortune of turning 24 years old, because he's a wildly successful, wealthy actor. It's not fair, it's not right, it's stupid, but even the stockbroker pulling in, you know, 7, 8 figures, 9 figures a year, working on Wall Street, they get to go to these places, they get to hang out with these people, and they maybe get to flirt with some supermodels as well. Nobody wants to look at how they got there. They just look that they're there and think, I should be there too. Well, you can be. That's the beautiful thing about capitalism. It's kind of funny because it turns people against capitalism, or it's being used to turn people against capitalism, when realistically, the answer, if that is your desire in life, the answer is capitalism. I want to be in a Caribbean island on a 200-foot mega yacht with a staff serving me constantly and a whole bunch of bikini-clad supermodels laying around. Okay? Are you willing to do the work to get there? The answer, most times, is no. Most people will not found businesses. Most people will not end up becoming multimillionaires, because most people just want to live their lives. There's nothing wrong with that. There's this idea that unless you've got millions upon millions of dollars, you've failed at life. No, you haven't. If you go to bed every night feeling satisfied, feeling happy, content, having had a good day, get a bunch of laughs, spend some time with family and friends, you're well ahead of the curve, because no amount of money is ever going to buy you that. And if money is more important to you than that, then you've got deep-rooted problems that you need to get therapy for. But if you look at these people who complain, these people, and we have a story of big protests in New York over the weekend coming up. If you look at the mentality of the people out there screaming about income inequality, and this one has that, but we don't have that, none of them are willing to do the actual work to get to the point where they can have those things, where they can be those things, where they can do those things. They aren't willing to do it. Because you know what it involves? A lot of sacrifice. It involves a lot of time. Maybe Leonardo DiCaprio isn't the best example of this, since he's been an actor since he was like 12 or whatever. But anybody in business who's rich, when they started their company, when they busted their ass, and I guarantee you even to this day, Jeff Bezos works more hours than anybody you know. They put everything on the line. And there are, for every success out there, there are 10 failures of people who put everything on the line and lost it and had to start over. And a lot of wildly successful people have had to start over repeatedly. But the idea of putting everything on the line is not something that some people are willing to do for whatever reason. There's nothing wrong with it. You don't have to put everything on the line. But if you want the rewards, you've got to take the risks. You've got to take the chance. You've got to put in the 80 hours, 90 hours, 120-hour work weeks. You're going to have to run a company that should have 15 employees with no employees for a while until you can afford the employees. That's just the way it works. No one wants to talk about that. This politics of envy, that you deserve something, that you should have something, that nobody, you know, somebody else shouldn't have something really nice. You should be the one with it, is problematic. It damages people's psyche, and it discourages a lot of people, I think, from actually going out and living the best life they possibly can. Not everybody's going to be a tycoon or a millionaire or a magnate. But if you're sitting around going, man, somebody's got something that I don't, it's not fair, it's not right. If that's all you obsess over, you're never going to get there. Worry less about what other people have and more about you working toward what you want. That's not taught anymore. That is the mindset of the Midwest. It's not the mindset of the coastal elites. Now, maybe because there are fewer multimillionaires and billionaires living between the oceans, and we don't see it growing up as much, although there certainly are enclaves of people with lots of money. I don't want the emails over that. I know what I'm, you know what I'm talking about. But in general, if you grow up in Manhattan, you see kids who have drivers take them to work, and they, you know, everything is taken care of. They have more money than they'll ever know what to do with. If you live in Los Angeles or San Francisco, there are people who will go to your school who are incredibly wealthy. They're possibly jerks. But you try to compare yourself to them when you're pulling up in a used Vega that's somehow still running and held together by duct tape, and you park next to a brand new BMW that somebody a grade below you has, you think, well, that's not right. That's not fair. That actually is the ultimate in fair. Because what's really fair is that you can earn one of those. They didn't earn one of those, but they've got one. It's theirs to do with what they want. If you want one, you can go out and earn it. Nobody teaches that anymore. And that is a used to be a distinctly American value. Now, sadly, it's a distinctly middle of the country value, as the coasts have been overwhelmed and infested with this jealousy culture. So Nancy Pelosi recognizes that you can turn, you know, from Canada to Mexico on the coasts blue, deep, deep blue. But that won't win you the presidency, because you've got to appeal to other people in the country, the middle of the country, people whose main want from government is the government to protect them from foreign problems, foreign threats, and mostly just to leave them alone. It's not even that they don't want to pay taxes, although many of them would be happy not to pay any taxes. It's a matter of they want their tax money. They want to be able to keep as much as they can for the government to do what it needs to do. And they see the government doing all this other crap that it doesn't need to do, that it has no business doing, or that it does terribly. And then you get a tax revolt. I don't want to pay more in taxes to pay for something that doesn't work, or to pay for something that has failed over generations. That's why the idea of welfare reform was so popular. People had been paying those taxes and paying taxes for that for generations, and they saw no benefit from it. So they said, well, we got to try something out. We got to change it. I'm sick of wasting money. People in the Midwest are very pragmatic. So Nancy Pelosi, while she's not, recognizes that most of the rest of the country is wildly pragmatic. And she knows, according to our Constitution, and thank God for the Electoral College, you could win every vote in California. Every vote in California and still lose the presidency. You could win every vote in California and New York State. You would win the popular vote in a landslide, but you would still lose the presidency if you cannot appeal to people whose philosophy does not have them interested in freebies from the government. People in the Midwest take out a loan, and you know what they do? They know that they have to pay that loan back. The coastal elites are running on a campaign on the idea that you are not responsible for that loan. You shouldn't have been forced to take that loan, as if the loan officer was threatening to kill you if you didn't pay, if you didn't sign for it. They are happily willing to let the government step in. I remember my first credit card. It was a $300 limit. I applied for it at a Tigers game, and I just applied for it to get a helmet, right? And a free, cheap plastic helmet at the game. Got the helmet. Somehow I got the card. I was just out of high school. I had no business getting this card. I had no money. I had no credit, nothing. But I got it. I was responsible for a couple of months, and then I ran it up to the limit. And I wasn't paying because I didn't have the money to pay. I was incredibly irresponsible when I was younger. My dad finally got a hold of my credit card bill, and it's $300. He goes, well, you're going to give me everything you have that doesn't go into your gas tank and your insurance until we pay this off. That was it. There was no get out of jail free card. There was no, my dad's going to pay it and I'm going to owe him money back. My dad didn't have the money to kind of throw around to take care of their irresponsible son. But I learned a valuable lesson. Don't borrow money unless you're going to pay it back. That's an important lesson that has served me throughout my entire lifetime. And the Democratic Party is working hard to insulate people from learning that lesson. The repercussions of that and the damage that will do, I can't even begin to quantify. Once that sets into people's minds, and you say, well, you're not responsible, don't worry about it. Here's your student loans, forgiven. Oh, wait, your mortgage, you're in over your head, you've got, you're underwater anymore. Don't worry about that, we'll take care of that. Magic wand, boof, taken care of. Well, if you think you've got this little government fairy that's going to come down and take away all your debts when you get in too deep, why wouldn't you get in too deep? Why wouldn't you buy more house than you could afford? Why wouldn't you run up your credit cards? Hell, why wouldn't you go back and get another degree? Well, of course, Democrats are going to make college free on top of all that. But and you don't really care about that when you're not paying taxes. So the Democrats, at least some of the people in leadership in Congress, are a little bit concerned that the Democratic Party is moving too far to the left, because they are moving too far to the left. And that's going to be fun to watch when you have promised everybody everything under the sun and have offered to spend more than $100 trillion on things, when you then have to pivot back to the middle. See, this is what people don't realize. In most presidential elections, when it comes to the promises made in the primaries, they're intangible promises. I wanted to give everybody health care. And that was about all that they would do. And that's all they would say. We need to make health care affordable. We need to make this, that, and the other thing good. They're not very specific things, so that when you win the nomination, you can kind of water them down, soft pedal them, without ever really having to admit that you're, you know, pulling back. You had plausible deniability and the vagaries of campaigning in the first place. Well, the Democrats this time are offering wildly, wildly specific, over-the-moon policy proposals that they're going to be held accountable for. You can't walk back, I'm going to spend $50 trillion on a Green New Deal. You can't walk back, I'm going to spend $32 trillion on healthcare. That's very specific. There's really no denial of that. So they're painting themselves into a corner. And Nancy Pelosi, now late, is trying to tell them to pump the brakes a little bit, or at least take the foot off the gas. And I think they can't. I don't think they can do it. They'll lose the mob. They'll lose their support. Their supporters, the activist base who are for sure to vote in the Democratic primary, which is all they're trying to appeal to, this is porn to them. This is music to their ears. They want more of it. They need more of it. What plays in the primary won't play in the general, and there has never been a bigger chasm between those two things in history that I know of than today in the Democratic Party. Speaking of the Democratic Party, let's take a peek into the mind of their current frontrunner. And depending on which poll, nationally, it's Joe Biden. And in Iowa, it is Elizabeth Warren. In the early states, at least right now, it looks like Elizabeth Warren is doing much better. Like I said, she came out with her Medicare for All plan on Friday and how she's going to pay for it. And it's going to be $32 trillion over 10 years. $32 trillion, for those of you playing the home game, if you divide that by 10, that's $3.2 trillion in spending over every year for the next 10 years. Now, the one thing about government estimates or estimates of cost and anything related to the government is they are always low. Right now, the government spends about $4.5 trillion a year. So you can see that $3.2 trillion per year is quite a nice chunk of change adding to that. And where is she going to come up with that money? Well, she claims still, after months of denying that she would ever even consider the idea of raising middle class taxes, she, in paying for her plan, guess what happens? She raises middle class taxes, but they're not straight up tax hikes. It's not as though your tax rate is going to go up directly, even though it will. She just has to. It's the game that she plays. It's the little sleight of hand that she runs through. She has things, we're going to have a new fee on this. We're going to have a new fee on that. State and local governments are going to have to come up with $600 billion of their end of the action. Well, where do you think they get their money? It's taxing by proxy. There is a nonstop string of tax hikes across the board on everyone and almost everything to come up, because you cannot come up with $32 trillion pretty easily in addition to what the government is already taking. And by the way, it's closer to $50 trillion, but she's never going to admit that. Nobody's ever going to say that. That's just how it works out. So the question was put to her over the weekend about tax hikes. I want you to listen very closely to what she's saying, because what you're about to hear from Elizabeth Warren is a flat-out, bold-faced, unequivocal, and impossible lie.
Senator, when you say you want to raise middle-class taxes, what is the income bracket that you used to find?
Here it's 100%. It doesn't raise taxes on anybody but billionaires. And you know what? The billionaires can afford it, and I don't call them middle class. So billionaire, that's where it worked.
Anyone under $1 billion, that worth?
That's right. It's not paying a penny more. That's exactly right.
Only billionaires are going to pay a penny more than they're paying now. Does anybody believe that for a second? Now, so I did some Googling because I wanted to know how many billionaires there were. There are apparently, according to U.S. News and World Report, a report from March 8th, 2019, so this number could fluctuate by a couple, but not by much. There are 607 billionaires in the United States. Now, they're not sitting on piles of money, mind you. They have stock mostly in companies that, like, you know, Zuckerberg's billions are tied up in Facebook stock. He's not got a vault in his mansion. So there are 607 billionaires in the country. We're talking about $32 trillion on the generous low end of the cost. How much do you think those people are worth, those 607 billion people? Well, let's just use Jeff Bezos as an example. He's worth $120 billion. $120 billion. That would not pay for a quarter of Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan for 1 year. If you took it all, $3.2 billion we'll just call it $3 trillion a year. $3 trillion, you have $120 billion. That's not even 10% of Elizabeth Warren's cost. Now, if you take all of Jeff Bezos's money, congratulations, you've got, you know, $120 billion. But it's gone. You can't go back to Jeff Bezos again. You just stole all of his Amazon stock, and he's worth nothing. He's worth zero. So where do you go from there? You go to the next billionaire. The next billionaire. Maybe Jeff, Bill Gates, worth $60 billion. You take all of that. You add that to Jeff Bezos' $120 billion. Then you go to Warren Buffett. There's another $50 billion. You begin to see the problem. Yeah, there are 607 of them, allegedly. But you will run out of their money pretty quickly. And you have to take all of it. And it's not just their money. You have to take their net worth in order to get anywhere near $3.2 trillion per year in the beginning, which again is a lowball estimate to try to pay for Elizabeth Warren's dream of a socialized medicine system. You begin to see that problem sooner or later, and actually sooner rather than later. You run out of billionaires. You run out of billionaires' money. You run out of billionaires' net worth. They're now worth zero, and you still have this massive liability sitting out there. What do? Well, you have to go to other people. And even if you just go, well, we're just going to go to millionaires. Well, you'll run out of them, too. Because while there are a lot more of them, there are a lot more people who aren't millionaires and billionaires. They have much more money, much more income. And that's where the money has to come from, because that's where a lot of the money is. Having a large net worth is not having a lot of money, is not having a lot of income. In fact, for many of them, for tax reasons, make like a dollar a year, and the corporations own everything that they own. It's a massive tax scam, but that's the way it is. That's the way that the Washington people have set it up. So the idea that only billionaires are going to pay more in taxes, everybody else will pay the same thing, nobody will notice any difference whatsoever, is a complete and total bald-faced lie. There are transactional taxes on there. I love the way that politicians have gone and redefined taxes, redefined things the way they are. Well, you know what? If we add a user fee onto the gas pump, that every time you go to fill up the gas tank, there's a dollar fee. It just costs you an extra dollar on the top of it. They won't call that a tax hike. No, it's just a fee. You can avoid the fee. A tax is something you can't avoid, but we have this fee here. It's a lovely fee, and you don't have to pay it if you don't use the service. Well, you need gas. So suddenly you've got this new so-called fee that you can't call it a tax. If you look at your cable bill or your phone bill, you will see all kinds of fees assessed by the federal government, the state government, in a lot of cases, the local governments. They just add it all in there. Here's another fee. Here's another fee. We all know what they are. They're tax hikes. They're massive tax hikes. But they get to call them something else. So Elizabeth Warren, technically, theoretically, can say she is not going to raise taxes on the middle class because she would never do such a thing. Yet we know there is no way humanly possible. And in fact, her plan even admits that it's going to cost people in the middle income brackets a lot more money because there is no well deep enough to pull the kind of money out of that she's talking about for this. I just wish politicians could be honest. You know, they can't be honest because they would never get elected. But it would be nice if the media were honest and pointing out these things like, hey, you know what? It's impossible. It's impossible. So let's get realistic about what we're doing here because this is impossible. Nope. They just regurgitated ad nauseum. Elizabeth Warren today released plans, and it doesn't include middle-class tax hikes. Yeah, they're just fees on everything. And your state and local governments have to pony up $600 billion a year. Well, where do you think they're going to get their money from? See, the problem ultimately is that liberals view all money as the government's money, and the government just allows you to keep certain things. It's a problem when you have people who've never really done real, honest work in their lives for a living. Elizabeth Warren has worked. She's held odd jobs when she was younger, when she was working her way through school. But she hasn't had to do them for a living. There aren't very many politicians who've had to actually work for a living to make ends meet, to keep a roof over their head. They don't tend to get into politics. When Elizabeth Warren really started having responsibilities in life, she was a law professor. She was a lawyer. She had a career. She was making money. And then she was a fake Indian, so she was making tons of money. And I imagine getting a slice of the casino action. But this perverts the worldview of people. And you just think, it drives me nuts. You can promise anything and you don't have to deliver. Along those lines about Elizabeth Warren, I have another clip of Elizabeth Warren from over the weekend where she's talking about American innovation. And this again goes to the mindset of somebody who has never done it, but doesn't let that and their ignorance of reality stand in the way of their assuredness that they know how something should work or does work. Talking about business here, she's talking about innovations that are developed through tax dollars, be they medical or technological or whatever. She kind of has a decent point at the beginning here that if you're an American company and you're going to take something that the public through the government, which the government shouldn't be doing, but they are, so we have to deal with that reality, but the government has developed a technology. If you're going to take that and monetize it, build it here, okay? Because your R&D costs were next to nothing, if not nothing. So then build it here. That's the deal. You want to use this tech, you want to use this innovation, fine. It's up for grabs, knock yourself out. The one caveat is you have to do it here in the United States. I like that to a certain extent. I have to think it through a little bit more, but that seems like a bit of all right to me. Then she goes further in talking about selling it to the world, and you can tell that she has no business experience whatsoever, no real world experience whatsoever, and she says something so bizarre at the end of this clip. So confounding. I don't even know how to set it up properly. So let's just have her say it.
Every part of this, but then part two is to say, and anyone can use this science to build these new things that we come up with. But if you build them, you got to build them right here in the United States of America. You can't build them anyplace else, not using our science. And what does that mean? It means if you're going to use U.S. tax dollars to invent it, then you're going to use them to produce U.S. jobs, good manufacturing jobs. And then the third part is we then sell these items, or if we have to, give them away all around the world.
If we have to, give them what? We sell these, you can use our tech, you got to manufacture it here in this country. And then you can sell it all around the world if you manufacture this. Or if we have to, we'll give it away. What? Do you understand how business works? You better familiarize yourself with how business works, Elizabeth, because you're trying to screw them all. If you wouldn't last very long. Let's just leave it at that, with that mentality. But this is just bizarre. If we have to, we'll just give it away. If we can't sell it, you'd go out of business if you can't sell it. But in the mindset of the left, everything should be free, and everything that isn't free should be subsidized to the point that it might as well be free. And we're all paying for it, and therefore everybody gets one. These sort of bizarre economic unrealities exist only in the minds of academics and the activist left, which brings us to our next story. Chaos in Brooklyn. There was a giant protest against police in Brooklyn. Now, I don't know if you've been following the news, but in Brooklyn and Bronx and the Queens, there has been a massive uptick in hate crimes. You probably haven't heard about it because the victims are Jews and the perpetrators are black. So it doesn't really fit into the hierarchy and the learning tree of liberal victims that they care about. But they're not protesting this. This was a black separatist group. complaining about the fare costs at metro stations on the subway and all the racism everywhere. It's ridiculous. The UK Daily Mail has a story. Chaos in Brooklyn as a thousand anti-cop protesters storm subway station yelling after a spate of violent arrests and the city's vow to add even more officers. Ooh. Nearly 1,000 protesters took to the streets of Brooklyn to demonstrate against the NYPD after a spate of violent arrests on the subway and over its plans to put more officers on the beat to catch anyone who skips paying the fare. Yes, there have been attacks. People have been violent and crazy on the subways, and the police have arrested them. And guess what violent, crazy people don't do? They don't go peacefully. But to the left in New York, to the Uber left, they don't care. They're not interested in such realities. And there is a problem of people hopping over the turnstiles. Guess what? That's a crime. So people have to pay. People have been being arrested for that. Well, these people don't want that. They are opposed to the idea of enforcing the law. The protesters started gathering in downtown Brooklyn near the Barclays Center around 7 p.m. Friday with their signs reflecting the dual nature of the march. Here's the dual nature of the march in the signs. F the police. Punch that cop. And NYPD out of MTA. Those are the signs. Those are some of the signs. F the police. Whoa, it's a dual nature of the march. I don't agree with your F the police thing or the punch a cop thing, but yes, transit should be free. This is the insanity of it. Their grievances stem from two, who cares? The other issue is that police have vowed to create 500 additional new jobs, specifically of officers to monitor the subway network and arrest anyone who jumps the barrier rather than pay the $2.75 fee. Again, they're not asking for your firstborn. Over the last month, several videos have emerged of NYPD cops violently arresting seemingly nonviolent subway riders. They're not. Well, they are. There's another sign. Ante up, punch that cop. No new police. You couldn't pay me to live in New York City. Not because I couldn't afford it, but you couldn't pay me to it. As a matter of fact, I have audio of the protest itself. And listen to this chant. This should terrify every individual, every free-thinking individual in this country. They are of a hive mind. You think I say that because it's funny. I say it because it's true. Listen, this is a group. I'll tell you who the group is afterwards. I'll look it up while I play this audio. But this is a group of people protesting the existence of police in New York City.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chain.
We have nothing to lose but our chain.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
Our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
And it goes on from there. They seem like a bunch of people you'd like to have over for a drink, don't they? Now, it's a big crowd. The group is called Decolonize This Place. And you can find them on Twitter at decolonize_this. And their Twitter bio describes themselves as this. And tell me if it jives with the report I just read you. Action-oriented movement on indigenous struggle, black liberation, free Palestine, workers, de-gentrification, and dismantling the patriarchy. Yes, this is just a normal group of average New Yorkers who've just had enough of people being arrested for hopping fares. No, these are radical leftists who do not give a damn about law and order. They despise law and order. They despise people who keep law and order. If you want to know why Elizabeth Warren is not, or not Elizabeth Warren, why Kamala Harris has done so horribly in the Democratic primary when realistically on paper, given the wokeness and given the ideas that the left now embraces that you should be embraced because of the color of your skin or your gender or your sexual orientation or whatever, Kamala Harris checks a bunch of boxes. She's a black woman. She should be, you know, right up at the top. But she's not because she has an overriding problem. Her overriding problem is she was a prosecutor. She comes from a law enforcement background. And the left despises law enforcement. It's not that they disagree with some of the tactics. It's not that they disagree with the way some things are done or the way that some laws are enforced. Not at all. They despise the existence, period. And it is evidenced by this chant, by this mindset, by these people taking to the streets in New York. We are for the indigenous struggle, black liberation, which is racism, free Palestine, anti-Semitism, workers, so you got your communism box checked, degentrification. Now, this is kind of funny. The left is now opposed. The gentrification became a bad word in the last decade or so. It's a huge, huge problem. Gentrification. Oh, no, it's horrible. Now, before that, the left was all about, allegedly, well, no, actually, the left was about segregation. And then when that became untenable, when they could no longer manage segregation, they had no choice but to accept desegregation. So what did they do? Because the left always wants the same thing. They want to control people and they need to keep people divided in order to control them because you can turn people against each other. You can manipulate people much better. They said, well, now we can't have gentrification is bad. The idea of gentrification is that a neighborhood improves, that a neighborhood gets better, a rundown neighborhood, people start moving into it and property values go up. People, crime goes down. People start replacing windows that are broken. You know, they take care. They cut their lawn. It's a good thing. And that gentrification mindset doesn't chase people out of the neighborhood. It actually causes everybody to kind of lift their game. If everybody on your block just let their block go to hell, then you might not feel like going out on a Saturday and mowing the lawn. But if everybody on your block has a meticulous lawn and you're the one with the crappy lawn, it might cause you to pick up your game a little bit. All right, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the one guy that has, you know, the crappy lawn. I got to at least try to make it look as good as I possibly can. Well, gentrification is kind of that way. It's not like they come in and just kick people out and say, "All right, get out of the way. Make way for Whitey." No. People come in and buy properties, restore them, and start living there instead of having vacant properties. And guess what? More people come in, and property values increase. And they always say, well, this chases the original residents out of these things. They can't afford the taxes. Well, government, stop screwing them on taxes, for one. And secondly, if you had a house that was worth $10,000 because the neighborhood was a toilet, and suddenly that house is worth $1.5 million, yeah, I could see why you'd have problem paying the taxes on that, the property taxes on that. Again, address that to your local politicians. But there's also the fact that your property, you now have $1.5 million worth of property. Even if you sell it, you can move to a better neighborhood than a $10,000 run-down row house piece of crap, right? So who's being hurt exactly here by gentrification? Nobody is. That's who. But the left doesn't like it because it is desegregation. And the left has always been against desegregation. They just don't call it that anymore. Now they call it degentrification. You cannot, don't gentrify this neighborhood. This is a traditionally Hispanic neighborhood. And if you start moving in Asians, what, that's going to just gentrify the neighborhood. I thought we were all supposed to get along. And we are. unless you're a liberal Democrat. And then you realize, hey, wait a second. These liberal Democrats, no matter what color they are, no matter what flavor human they are, don't want us to get along. There's a reason for that. They get mileage out of us not getting along. They get mileage out of making people believe that they're victims and the government is going to protect them. Government isn't going to protect you. The government doesn't know you exist. The government doesn't give a damn. The politicians want your vote so they can have power to control you, whoever you are, not you specifically, the mass you. It's a scam. And it's perpetrated by the very same people who brought you slavery, who brought you Jim Crow, who brought you segregation. They're doing the exact same things. They're just calling it different things now. You know, instead of straight up segregation, it is separate graduations based on race. Oh, it's all right. It's degentrification. You name it. And this is who the left is. They haven't changed their stripes. They've changed their tactics. Speaking of Democrats and their tactics, there's a few little updates in the impeachment inquiry, if you will, that we should touch on briefly. There's some new polling out that does not bode well for the president. But again, polling is so subjective and ridiculous, especially polling on something as complex as this. You're essentially asking people what they think of the president of the United States because nobody's thinking about the ramifications for this. If you had done a poll of heavily Republicans, should Barack Obama be impeached from office? Absolutely. You would get an overwhelming response. They're worthless. And what's sad is that they are being used as the guiding light by the Democrats, by our politicians in general. Believe me, if 75-80% of the public wants Donald Trump removed from office, if they want him gone, there will be Republicans who go along with it too. That's the sort of mobocracy mentality. It is a dangerous thing to care so deeply and be governed by public opinion, especially on matters that are so constitutionally important. Because you can, if you really make a concerted effort, you can turn the public's opinion against things and have those swings go wildly. So this is from the Daily Caller, Justin Caruso. A Fox News poll released Sunday indicates that 49% of Americans think Donald Trump should be impeached and removed from office. According to Fox, 49% want Trump impeached and removed from office, 4% say he should be impeached but not removed, and 41% oppose impeaching Trump. This number is just slightly down from last month when Fox News had it at 51%. It's a garbage poll. It's irrelevant. Most people don't know what this is about. The thing about Donald Trump, the thing about all politicians these days, is the public's opinion of them is already baked into the cake. People know what they think of them and are governed accordingly. In a way, we're turning into a lawless Wild West situation. I want him gone. Get him gone. I don't care how you do it. Get him gone. That's a dangerous precedent. I despised Barack Obama's presidency. I thought it was a disaster for the country, and we're still living with the ramifications of it to this day. But he should not have been removed from office because I didn't like him. He won the presidency. He won two terms. He served his two terms. Those are the rules. That's the game. We as conservatives accept that. Liberals do not. Think back, let's see, the gay marriage issue out in California before the Supreme Court ruled. Liberals who say they want to be ruled by the mob and democracy, this is what democracy looks like. There was a referendum to legalize gay marriage in the state of California. It failed miserably. It failed miserably largely due to overwhelming black support. in opposition to gay marriage, if you can follow that. Nobody wants to talk about that. They ruined the guy who founded Mozilla. Remember him? Justin Eichmann or something like that. I can't remember his name. But they ruined him. They ran him out of his own company because he gave $1,000 to the cause. And somebody leaked that information. So this guy who founded a company started a bunch of jobs. He was chased out of the company that he founded because he gave $1,000 to his white guy. But they never want to talk about the fact that the vast majority of the black community came out in support of traditional marriage and opposed to gay marriage. But they lost. That's not the point of this. Anyway, they lost. The left lost that fight in California. What did they do? They immediately sued and got an injunction against that becoming the law of the land. Because when they win, they're all about, oh, a majority rule. The people want this, that, and the other thing. But when they lose, they don't give a damn about that. They go immediately to the courts. They never settle for anything. They never surrender. And sadly, Republicans surrender all the time. Oh, Donald Trump is under attack. Let's just get him out of there and start over. We need somebody better than him. He's too controversial. I don't care how controversial he is. I care about how effective he is. Of course he tweets things that I wish he had, and he says things that I don't think he should. But he won the presidency. I didn't. That's the difference. And the left will never accept that. They aren't accepting that. They're trying to overturn that. And they think, and maybe rightly so, that if they can get public opinion on their side, wouldn't it be nice if we had politicians who didn't give a damn about, especially on matters like this, who didn't give a damn what the public wanted. They didn't care about the polls. If we had a media that was more interested in reporting the facts of the issues rather than the thoughts of an uninformed, uninterested, disengaged population on the issues, wouldn't that be nice if you knew going in that what was legal, what the law says, is what matters, not what Gallup came up with, not what Fox News was able to get out of by calling 1,000 people on the phone and then say, oh, well, this is how the people are represented. To be perfectly honest with you, it shouldn't matter what the people think. Would you want if you were under arrest for something, if you were on trial for something, would you want a poll of all Americans who only have a vague notion of your case? Do you want them to decide your fate? Or do you want the people who have been briefed on the law and seen all the evidence to do it? So I think most people would fall into that latter category because that's the smart choice. Politicians are supposed to lead. On some issues, yes, you can take the public's pulse, but a general poll about impeachment, an issue that is far, look, again, if the next president who's a Democrat is screwed, if this goes through, if this is the precedent, forget it. We should just have a perpetual special counsel. Let's pass a constitutional amendment to create a perpetual special counsel whose sole job it is to find out whether or not the president, any president, has done anything that should have them removed from office. Let's just do it. That's what's going to happen. If Republicans control the House and the Democrats control the White House, Republicans will do the same damn thing that Democrats are doing right now. And you know what? In a way, it would be justified. It would be incredibly damaging to our republic, but it'll be justified because they've set the bar this low. This is where they are. And we might get to the point where we never have another president again who can serve a full term, let alone two, because they'll be removed. So I guarantee you, if you start crawling up somebody's life with a microscope, you're going to find things, whatever it is, however minor it is, however ridiculous it is, like this stupid Ukraine phone call. And if you can spin it well enough and you can get 50% plus one of the American people on your side, then, well, it's time to impeach. We must remove from office. That's what the American people want. Part of the beauty of our republic is it is so hard to do things and to get things done that it is designed explicitly to not give the American people what they want. They're the ones who are responsible for getting what they want. You want more of other people's money? Go out and earn more money. Don't try and take somebody. Don't use the government to do it. You want to remove the president of the United States because you don't like him? Tough crap. Vote them out next time. That's the deal. The left has never been one to accept it. The whistleblower, by the way, there's news on the whistleblower. He's agreed, according to his lawyers, to answer questions from Republicans on there. He's, you know, his lawyers and the Democrats don't want him to ask any questions. They don't want him in public. They don't want to have any interrogation of him. Now they're saying he'll answer questions in writing. Now, that's, I thought that wasn't good enough. Democrats whine to this day that President Trump did that, and he has a case for executive privilege against somebody working under his control in the body of Robert Mueller. But the whistleblower, well, he dictates that, no, the whistleblower can't dictate terms. We know who the whistleblower is. We know the whistleblower's ties. If the whistleblower can't explain why his name is Eric Sciaramella, if Eric Sciaramella cannot go out, this according to Real Clear Investigations, if Eric Sciaramella can't go out there and explain why, rather than following the normal protocols for making a whistleblower complaint, he went to Adam Schiff's staff, if he can't explain that in a convincing way, and if he can't answer questions about how many times he's met with Adam Schiff and his staff, then why should we believe anything he has to say? I think we should absolutely be able to question this guy in public. Why were you working with the DNC to dig up dirt from Ukraine on President Trump back in 2016, Eric? He doesn't want to answer that. He wants to answer questions in writing. Well, the thing about questions in writing is you can't really have effective follow-up questions. You need to be able to follow a train of thought as it leaves the station. And the American people need to hear it and see it and judge for themselves. But Democrats and the so-called whistleblowers' lawyers aren't willing to let that happen. Because why? If this guy has done nothing wrong, and this guy was only truly concerned about what was going on inside the White House under Donald Trump, why could he not answer any questions? If he is the key to the smoking gun, why wouldn't he line up to answer questions? Or is there something else at play? People who refuse to answer questions who are not the subject of a probe generally have something to hide. Something they don't want you to know. The possibilities in the case of this so-called whistleblower, honestly, are endless. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, but no, Republicans should not accept written answers, submitted to written questions. No way. Real-time follow-up. Gauge the credibility of the witness. If he's telling the truth, he's got nothing to hide, right? That's what the Democrats said about Donald Trump. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. It's already been an hour. Where does the time go? Just flies. If you want to enter to win the signed copy of Jesus on Trial by David Limbaugh, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Any other compliments, complaints, whatever you got, send it there. Programming note, if you're listening to this in the morning, I will be live from 9 till noon Eastern on WCBM radio in Maryland at WCBM.com. Spread all around the world in like the TuneIn app and all those different ways. I know you can listen to the station on Alexa too, so you can just say, Alexa, open WCBM, and that should work. Otherwise, be back here tomorrow, where we will have yet another exciting episode. It'll be 24 hours from today, and I suspect there will be 36 hours worth of crazy crammed into it. I'll see you then.
And then the third part is we then sell these items, or we have to give them away.